The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this August 14th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us as we are getting started on a beautiful Thursday afternoon in the Auburn Opelika area. We have a ton to get to on the show today. Auburn football had practice this morning with some media availability. Hugh Freeze met with the media, two wonderful guests, and a whole lot more. We'll tell you about it coming up in just a few minutes. But my man, Christian, how are you, sir? Happy Thursday. We are 1 week and one day from the start of high school football in the state of Alabama.
I was about to say, I don't know. I'm getting started. I'm getting started tonight here on ESPN2. We'll talk about that here in just a little bit. But no, happy Thursday, man. We are 2 weeks into the month of August. You feel like it was just June, and
I feel like we're already was yesterday.
We're already here. It's going to be a really, really good show here today. We're talking a little bit more about the Auburn-Baylor game as more news has come out on the Baylor side of things, or maybe not more news, but more hype coming out on the Baylor football side of things. Just how important is this game? Do we have a game in comparison of this is the most important game for Auburn since? That's where we're going to start the show here today. We got some more news. We talked a little bit about it on the way out yesterday along the kick returning and punt returning, but just overall thoughts on that side of things. We're going to get joined by Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network at 2:30. We're going to get his thoughts on fall camp as we continue to work our way to that August 29th day in Waco, Texas. Also, some basketball news as well with the Auburn-Houston game being confirmed. All of that at 2:30. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Jackson Arnold at 2:45 and how we've heard some good things out of camp along the offensive side of the football, how it feels like things have flowed just a little bit better, but it still feels like the communication is still something to I feel like we can say worry about.
trying to figure out
the right way. But that's
how I feel about it. The noises you just made is how I feel.
Feel like it's something to maybe begin to worry about, maybe not, and we're going to see how that all works out. But thankfully, we get to talk about the what-ifs here on the show today. So what better way to start off the show?
Yep, and so two wonderful guests, as you mentioned, around those guests, before, after those guests. We would love to hear from you. The phone lines are open. We do close them, of course, when we have a guest on, but any other time, give us a call. We want to hear from you. 334-321-1390 is the number to get you through to us. 334-321-1390. You can be a part of the show and be on the line, or the text box is open. If you don't want to call in and talk, you can shoot us a text, shoot us a question, a comment, a question, anything that's on your mind. You can do that by hitting us up in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And we begin with a topic that has been very hot over the last couple of days in terms of Auburn versus Baylor in this season opener on the 29th, 7 o'clock on Fox. Remember, this is a game that's going to be on Fox television. Of course, it'll be on Wings 94.3 here locally on the radio, so you can check it out that way. I encourage you to check it out that way with our friends at the Auburn Sports Network. And the drama just continues to build, Christian. I mean, Doug asked me about it earlier today. It seems like every single day, more drama and hype and smack talk comes out from one of these two fan bases.
Yeah.
And look, we know. All right, we know Auburn fans are toxic at times in terms of confidence and what they feel can happen in this game. And I do think there's a little bit of SEC pride here from Auburn fans. And I think on the opposite side, Baylor probably feels a little disrespected coming out of the Big 12 and feeling that they can't beat the big bad SEC, right? And they look at this as an opportunity. And
oh, yeah.
Based off of all the festivities that are going to be on, I think you can see just that.
Yeah, I mean, if it weren't for high school football in the state of Texas being as big as it is, I mean, the entire state of Texas, and at least all of Waco, would shut down simply from the standpoint of the big bad SEC is coming to town. Doesn't matter if it was Alabama, or doesn't matter if it was a team that hasn't had that prolonged success of maybe the Auburns of the past, or maybe the Vanderbilts of the entire history of the SEC. But no, they have a chance to do something and make a statement really early on, now coming in as just about confirmed underdogs as the sports books continue to not really know what to think for this game, but a lot have leaned back to Auburn by a point and a half, maybe two. But yeah, we've already confirmed with Waco, or we haven't, but they have confirmed that it is a blackout.
Yep.
And so obviously that's going to fire everybody up. Just it being a Friday, man, the opening night, it's going to bring a lot more energy. But then they released a little teaser video yesterday of a couple of their players, and they walked in and opened up some of these crates, these big briefcases or the big little warehouse boxes, and opened it up and obviously didn't show what it was, but it was just bright gold, a big gold light coming out of the video. Then today they come out and release the video of the history of the Chrome Domes, of Baylor and their gold chrome helmets, and I guess that has yet to be confirmed, but it's all but confirmed that those are coming back as well for the game against Auburn on national television, when they're trying to do every single thing they can to get their team and their fan base fired up.
You know, today before the show, I was trying to do a little bit of research and still trying to put some things together here on what Baylor's home atmosphere is going to be, and trying to flash back over the past decade plus, maybe even the last 15 years, of some of the best home games that Baylor has had in recent memory, because I've done my best to vocalize that this is going to be a tough environment.
Fair.
This is not a neutral site game. This is not going to Kentucky. This is a, in terms of atmosphere, a top half SEC road game that you're going against. This is comparable to Oxford. This is comparable to Knoxville, I think. I mean, I really do. In the SEC, I think Auburn is up there. LSU is up there. I think Florida is up there in terms of toughest places to play.
Yeah.
And then I put Baylor in that second tier category of Bryant Denny and Knoxville, Oxford. I mean, this is a tough place to play that Auburn is going to be going into. And again, you mentioned the blackout and now the gold and whatever the heck they're going to be doing. I mean, those fans are going to be crazy and they're going to be ready to go. And there have been some really big games for Baylor at their home stadium. And I go back to the Oklahoma game in 2021 at McLean Stadium that Baylor was able to pull off. I mean, this was one that, when you see this atmosphere at its best, it is one of the best in the Big 12. And Auburn has to be prepared for that, be ready for that, be able to communicate through that, and more on that later on in the show. Auburn has to be ready. This is a tough road environment.
Yeah, I think Oxford is a relatively decent comparison to the stadium from the standpoint of the way that it's shaped. Vaught Hemingway has a little bit more. They updated not too long ago some of the premium seats in the end zone, and it's kind of comparable to the little hill that McLean Stadium has right under their Jumbotron. But yeah, I think it's a really good comparison. The student section is also something that you don't see in the SEC, which makes it a lot tougher. It looks like, my comparison is, it looks like Neville Arena. That's the way that it doesn't work its way up. It is about 20 rows deep, and it takes up the entire one half of the football field, and it's the away side.
Yeah.
That it takes up.
They like 30 to 30, like 30-yard line to 30-yard line?
I think it literally goes to end zone to end zone.
Oh,
because
does it really?
The way that it begins to curve,
okay,
maybe from the 5 to the 5, but again, probably 15, 20 rows deep, and they're right on you the entire time. It looks like Neville Arena.
Yeah, that's
at least
a really good comparison.
On the far sideline because of where they stand. And so it feels just a little bit weirder because that affects so many things, you know, in ways that you don't think. When you're sitting there on the coin toss, okay, well, we want to go into the student section for the first quarter, but because that means we're going away in the second quarter, we're going back into it in the third, we're going away from it here in the fourth. Same thing if you see the overtime rules, right, where the home team always wants to play into their student section in the first overtime, and that's why if you feel like you're the away team, man, just get to second overtime where it feels like you have a little bit more of an advantage. You don't really get that here because there's not one side of the stadium that's a little bit louder, I guess, if you're taking the Jumbotron on the hill as the quote-unquote quieter side.
But
from the standpoint of a student section, you're not going to have one-third of the stadium in that left corner where it's just maddening, and then you work your way on the other side of the field, you feel like you can hear a little bit better.
And I know that I've alluded to this a couple of times in the past several, I don't know, weeks or months or whatever. We here in Auburn, obviously, are talking about the implications of this game from the Auburn perspective, but we have looked at this from the Baylor perspective, and I'm hoping to get a Baylor insider on the show between now and then, hopefully that week of the Baylor game, to tell us in more detail what this game means for the Baylor Bears, because as we know, they have continued to get support and love as a Big 12 title favorite, Christian. I mean, there are people and quote-unquote experts who are picking Baylor to either flirt with a Big 12 championship game appearance, be in the Big 12 championship game, or just flat-out win the Big 12 championship game. And so what does this game mean for Baylor? A topic that we will revisit several times, but man, they play Auburn in the home opener, in the season opener. Then they travel the very next week to SMU. So two cross-conference games to open up the season, not against G5s, against really good teams. SMU is a top 20 team preseason.
SMU was a playoff team last year.
Exactly. And Baylor's going
with Rhett Lashley as the head coach.
And Baylor goes to SMU. 11 a.m. kick on Saturday, September 6th. They also have number 11 Arizona State on that schedule. They have 17th ranked Kansas State on that schedule. TCU is on there. I think a lot of people are sleeping on TCU. Cincinnati's on there. UCF, Utah, Arizona. All teams that could be competitors in the Big 12. And so if you're Baylor, I would think you're looking at those first two games of Auburn and SMU, and the mindset has to be get one.
Yeah.
If you get one of those, everything's in front of you for Baylor. Nobody's going to look down on Baylor if Auburn comes in and wins a competitive football game in the opener. I don't think anybody's going to be like, oh, Baylor's a fraud, they're terrible. And I don't think anybody's going to look down on you at all if you go on the road and lose to an SMU squad that, as you mentioned, was in the playoff last year.
I do think there's a little bit more pressure for Baylor at home. I think if you split or if you lose game one, obviously the pressure builds that much more. I would imagine there's a little bit more pressure to defend home turf rather than going on the road and losing to a really, really competitive game or losing to a really good ACC team. Looking at McLean Stadium again, they actually renovated it not too long ago. So the student section actually goes to the out-of-bounds line beyond both end zones. And so
it really does stretch the
whole
length of the
field. It goes the entire length of the floor or the entire length of the field, and that's on the road sideline.
And so yeah, they about 20 to 25 rows deep.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. The couple pictures on there. Yeah, holds 45,000, and so you feel like that might give Auburn their best advantage from that standpoint. It is completely field turf as well, and something Auburn's not completely used to playing on. But yeah, going back to the actual Baylor side of things, I would imagine if the mindset is to get one, I think it's the home game. I think it's you got to get off onto a hot start, man, because look at this Auburn team. Look at what they've done in the past. Look at how we're talking about SMU, right? It's a team that made the playoff. It's a team that seems like they're working in the right direction in the state of Texas and has everything going their way, man. They just signed an extension for their head coach. They're doing everything the right way. Look at this team in the SEC that hasn't had a winning record or hasn't had a number by their name in the top 25 since 2021. Look at this team that just can't seem to get out of their own way. You feel like it would be more of a slap in the face to them if Auburn comes in and whoops their you-know-what rather than you go on the road and take a game at SMU.
But let me push back and play the other side of this. If you're Baylor and a fan of Baylor, okay, you lose a tough game in the home opener against an SEC team. That at that point, we would like to think Auburn goes on to do something halfway decent, right? Let's say Auburn ends up being a 9-win team. End of the year, that doesn't look like such a bad loss.
No.
But you make up for that with a road game, a road win over what is already considered a top 20 team in the country, and you use that on your resume. If I'm Baylor, and I hate to say this, the chances of a win over 16th-ranked SMU, the chances of that being a better resume builder than a win over Auburn in the home opener is pretty good to me. I think there's a better chance that a win over SMU at the end of the season looks better than a win over Auburn at the end of the season. Road game, ranked game. Road game, ranked team versus home game, unranked team. Right? When you look at it from that way, it's like, well, maybe so. They would obviously love to win both, and there's, I think there's a chance they lose both, and then you're really in trouble. If I mean, Baylor's schedule isn't all that bad, but those first two games are not easy, and all of a sudden you start 0-2, and Baylor's playoff chances are nearly extinct.
Yeah, I think there's more pressure on the Auburn game initially because you start 1-0, you feel like you have that bubble wrap, right? You have that protection to go to SMU and drop that game. Then you would work your way back after that two-game stretch and go, okay, we split. We won the game that we feel like we should have won. We lost a competitive game against the game that we feel like we probably shouldn't have won. But like what you're saying, you drop the game to Auburn, that builds that much more pressure to not start 0-2. And regardless of which win feels better, you like where Auburn is at from the standpoint of, man, you feel like they have to go out and perform that much better since it is that week one game.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot on this matchup on both sides of it. And nobody's season is over if you lose this game, either Auburn or Baylor. But as it is with any other season and any season opener, you lose game one, you just have to make up for it that much more along the way. It limits the mistakes that you can have for the rest of the season. And that's so stressful.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
so much.
We've talked about it to where you win a P4 non-conference game, it gives you a slip up in conference play. I feel like those two can kind of balance each other out from the standpoint of the playoffs, right? If an SEC team goes 9-3, but then, I don't think they will, but say Texas goes 9-3, but you have Ohio State as a win on your resume, nobody remembers that loss to Georgia.
Right.
Because it more than makes up for it. Obviously, Ohio State is one of the best non-conference games that anybody could play, but still, when you look at it to that same degree of...
I think LSU is a better example there.
Sure. Yeah.
Playing Clemson
LSU
in the opener.
LSU playing Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
They lose to Alabama or somebody. You feel like, okay, yes, but you go and look at it, you're 9-3. Oh, yeah. Remember when they went to Death Valley
and beat the ACC champ or whatever happens there?
Right.
Yeah.
The way that certain games play out have a little bit more weight to them, and that's why, man, we've talked about how important this game is for both teams, but you feel like even more for the Auburn Tigers. And, man, you start thinking about some of these games as we head to break. We'll talk about it on the other side, but is this Auburn, or what would you say? This is Auburn's most important game since when? You feel like, I mean, there's a couple different answers you can give, but, and I know that you mentioned it, yeah, if you lose game one, the season's not over, but you want to talk about getting off on the right foot, going in the right direction, a win on the road in Waco, Texas on a Friday night when everything is against you, the experts, the fans, the uniforms, the helmets now to this standpoint on a Friday night, where unfortunately it's probably most likely not Gus Johnson on the call, which really sucks to think about because as soon as it was Fox, you were sitting there, you thought there was a chance, but not with the next game that's at 11 o'clock the next morning. Everything's against you, man. Everything is against you. Go take the win, man.
334-321-1390 is the phone line number. The text box always open at 784-1067. This is the most important game for Auburn since when? We answer that question next. We want to hear from you. You can give us your thoughts, and we'll talk about that as we're just underway here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on ESPN 106.7, and we're answering the question, or I guess asking it and then answering it, and want to hear from you. Shoot us your answers in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. The Auburn-Baylor game. This is the most important game for Auburn football since when? And we have a couple of answers, but in preparation for this, you start thinking back at the different scenarios and situations that Auburn football as a program has been in, right? Different coaching regimes and drama and carnage, right? And fan base turning and, you know, just all the things that have happened in the last 25 years, we'll say, of the Auburn football program history, right? And there are definitely certain games out there at the end of the Tuberville era, in the very short Gene Chizik era, in the Gus Malzahn era, a lot of them in there, right? And a couple of times where he clearly saved his job and then got paid to do so. And then in the Harsin era as well. I'm having a hard time making a comparison because there's just not many instances, Christian, in my opinion, where the result of one game alone could send the fan base in such polar opposite directions. Like, so many of those games at the end of coaching regimes, which that seems to be like the moment we have this type of a conversation when doubt starts to creep in about the current head coach, right? That's where you feel like you get in these situations.
Sure.
I can't remember. Because it seems like so many of those games, the fan base went into it, was like, all right, this is the last straw. Like, we already kind of know where this is going, but let's see if he can save it. Malzahn was the king of that. Would lose to Arkansas, but then beat Bama, right? That's just what he did. Harsin couldn't beat anybody, clearly. Tuberville had some games down the stretch. Chizik and his short. I mean, it just seemed like in those moments that we're going to name and some that we won't, we already knew where we were going. But this game against Baylor, it really is 50-50 of, like, depending on how this game goes, most Auburn fans are going to go one way or the other here. And so trying to find comparisons of that historically, I'm finding it to be a little difficult.
Yeah, and again, it is kind of one of those unanswerable questions because there's so many different ways that you can take it. You took it from the standpoint of just kind of all around of – from a coaching standpoint of which way he is going to go, from a fan base buy-in. I mean, the first thought that we had was the Cal game last year just because of what the season was hoping to be at that point. But obviously that has no comparison to this now. The ones that came to my mind, at least from this standpoint of where a season can go, is 2017 and 2019. Because those seasons were pretty similar, in my opinion. And you went out, and yes, this was neutral site, but you beat two power conference teams. One went on to win the Pac-12 one year, and the other was pretty dang good as well and has a quarterback who's throwing to Keandre Lambert-Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Auburn, Washington in Atlanta with Jarrett Stidham. The highlight play of Sal Canella in the back of the end zone going up and winning that 50-50 ball, which, man, he was so underutilized. That man should have had 80 targets in the red zone every single year. But shout out to him for leading the Browns in receiving yards in the preseason game this past week. And so, yeah, shout out Sal Canella. But that type of game, the Booby Whitlow running over the guy at the goal line, I remember so much from that game. That game, and then Auburn, Oregon in 2019.
Yeah.
Bo Nix's freshman year, Gus Malzahn, the Seth Williams, you know, they can play it safe, but they're not going to.
Mm-hmm.
And he halfway spiked the ball and got a penalty. And then all of a sudden you had to watch Oregon drive to midfield. And thankfully, Justin Herbert's arm was too strong and threw it out of the back of the end zone. But the back and forth from that game, the ebbs and the flows. And look at what both of these teams did after winning that first game. You went on and you had some pretty dang good seasons. In 2016, you had everything there for you. In 2019, you beat Alabama and also had everything right there in front of you. And you felt like those were seasons you hoped would be able to build off of.
Right.
Right now, you're at the point where, man, you go out, you win a game like this, it could feel that same type of way of, okay, you get off on the right foot. You get that one big win against the Power Four non-conference opponents. And now you play the rest of your season and see how it plays out.
It's a big one. In Waco, August 29th, we are counting down the days. And we'll bring a guy on here next that will talk more about Auburn and Baylor and the drama that we've been seeing and hearing. Plus, what's going on with Auburn as they've had practice every day and some media availability as well with Hugh Freeze. We talked to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. He joins us on the phone lines next.
Minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us here on ESPN. We get to the phone lines and welcome in our first guest of the afternoon. You hear him on the Auburn Sports Network. You'll hear him coming up on Monday for the first edition of Tiger Talk and then out in Waco, Texas, a part of the football coverage on the Auburn Sports Network. Brad Law is with us now on the phone lines. How's it going, man, on this Thursday as we get closer to the start of the football season?
Yeah, it's going great. 2 weeks from, I guess, now, we'll be landed or maybe on the way from the airport to Waco. So counting down the days and getting excited about it. Sure are.
Well, there's so much to go over and to talk about with fall camp, of course, still going on. And one scrimmage in the books and another one upcoming for Auburn. And while it was closed off to folks and we didn't get a chance to actually see it, are you able to kind of respond to what folks have said and kind of what we're hearing and seeing at the viewing windows that we do get for football practice?
You know, I like my favorite. I got a couple of favorite things that we get to watch during those viewing windows, and that's anytime you have receivers and defensive backs going up against one another. And today we looked a little bit during the time we were allowed to watch, and even though they were just, you know, it was in helmets today, and they weren't fully padded as they get ready to scrimmage tomorrow. But just looking at all those defensive linemen and watching them go get taught the very nuanced, detailed things by Rock Bellantoni and Vontrell King-Williams. And when watching that group, and I could name 12 guys, you know, that you're excited about watching, and who knows how much we'll see some of those guys. But, man, to watch them rotate in and out and know what kind of position this team is in on the defensive line and know that the teams that compete for championships in our conference have depth and talent across the front on both sides of the ball, but man, especially defensively. You know, if you see a team that has a bunch of guys taken in the NFL draft off the defensive line, chances are that team has competed for something special. Games mean something in November, and so it's fun to watch the guys along the defensive front.
I have a more open-ended question here, Brad, and it's one that it's a prediction. It's impossible to actually answer it factually until we see, but in terms of the freshmen that are on this roster for Auburn, we know that there's so many of them that are talented on both sides of the ball that I think we'll see some playing time from this year. If you had to take a guess at which side of the football, offensively or defensively, will see more freshmen make an impact in 2025 for Auburn? Which side of the ball would it be and why?
I like that question a lot. It's a very hard question to answer, too, because you know, right away you take away freshmen off the offensive line because you just don't see that much. The receiver position's got a lot. Like, you know, Sam Turner would have to be the guy to break through. At running back, it would have to be Omar Mabson probably that breaks through and gets the playing time. So I'm going to go defense because you're probably going to rotate more guys defensively. And we really like what we've seen from, to stay on the defensive line, Jordan Crawford and Malik Autry. We like what we see from Elijah Melendez in the linebacking core. I absolutely think you see him early on. I don't know how you keep Jared Smith off the field, maybe even in special team situations, but, you know, and then you go to some of the defensive backs. I mean, do we see New Boy Fagans? Do we see, I guess my mind's slipping on a couple of the other names, too, that you could see defensively. I think there's just more of an opportunity, not because there's not talent there, but because I think overall you play more guys in a game defensively. So I'll take that side of the ball.
Do you see any more pressure for one side of the ball to perform as you're hearing more about one side on fall camp? Obviously, right now on the defensive side, you're hearing that they're going and getting after it every single day, and so much praise is coming from DJ Durkin's side of the football. Do you feel like there's any sort of pressure for the offense to meet that sort of expectation, or is it something that can be overlooked just because that offense is playing against so many of these great guys on the other side?
I think it's a fair question. I also think that going back to the Tommy Tuberville and Pat Dye teams, I mean, that, sure. Even some of the Gus Malzahn teams, the defense is just ahead of the offense most of the time. I mean, if you got a camp where the offense is ahead of the defense with still 2 weeks to go before the first game and with the defense, you know, the defense is never having to defend the entire offense. Let's just think about this schematically a little bit. So the quarterback isn't going to run in these practices the way he's going to run during a game. So Auburn's defense should be ahead of its offense because the defense is like guarding 3-on-2 in basketball. They're having to defend wide receivers, and they're having to defend non-quarterback runs. They're not having to defend quarterback runs in the same way they would in a game. And so they should have the upper hand. I don't think there's any outside pressure. Like, I don't think there's pressure on one side of the ball that's separate from internal, just everybody wanting to compete at the highest level. I think the lines of scrimmage are making the other side better. I think those receivers and DBs are making each other better. I think there's healthy competition between those guys and among those groups. But I don't think there's any added pressure because – you know, maybe one side of the ball has gotten a little more praise than the other. I think that is the nature of football and the nature of fall camp.
Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network with us on the phone lines right now here on ESPN 106.7 during the Thursday edition of On the Line. And want to go to the special team side of things for just a moment, because this is an area that I think most people who covered Auburn or watched Auburn last year can agree, and I think Hugh Freeze would tell you this too. Special teams just wasn't what it needed to be last year from a kicking field goal standpoint, punting standpoint, kick return, punt return, coverage. All of those things need to improve from 2024 to 2025. But I think so far from what we've seen and heard, Brad, those things are going to come to fruition with McPherson being back, Hudson Cock coming in as the new punter from Oklahoma State. And now we've started to hear and see Eric Singleton and Rayshon Pleasant being those main go-to kick returners. Your thoughts on what that unit as a whole needs to do in 2025?
The area that I'm most excited about seeing the transformation from one year to the next. I think you can conservatively, and I may have said it on this show before, I know I've said it elsewhere, I think you can conservatively say that Auburn wins two games last year if Alex McPherson is healthy. Alex is 20 for 22 in his career. One of those misses was in the Kentucky game last year when they were just trying to get him back out there and into it. And he's never missed an extra point. He's just so nearly automatic, and Auburn missed kicks in critical times when they could have gone up two scores in the second half. of conference games last year, and that changes everything. What we don't often talk about, and you alluded to this, Jacob, is penalties on kick returns. And now instead of starting at the 25 or 20, worst case, now you're back at the 8. Now you're back at the 10. And the coaches have talked about how they assemble their play calling based on field position a lot of the time. And they're just a lot more conservative down there at the 10 or the 8 than they are at the 25 or 20 or 30. So field position matters. A couple of first downs matter. Being able to catch a difficult punt, Rashawn Pleasant, an All-American potential player in the special teams in a return game, Eric Singleton, north-south speed, cutting ability, and Malcolm Simmons and his playmaking ability returning kicks. I think the potential is there for that group to change field position. And even Hudson Cock, the transfer coming in from Oklahoma State, I mean, Oscar Chapman was a tremendous punter for Auburn, but in net punting last year, the Tigers were 11th in the SEC. And so I think in all phases of the return and kicking games, this team has a chance to steal 30 to 40 yards and, you know, maybe 3 to 6 points more per game than what it had a year ago.
And that's something that will be highlighted and will be just crucial when Auburn takes the field on August 29th on the road on a Friday in Waco when they take on the Baylor Bears. Special teams has to be on point to help keep the Tigers in that game and give them a chance to walk away with a victory. And speaking of that Baylor game, Brad, as we do get closer to that, I know you've seen it and maybe even partaken in it a little bit, the drama and the things that are building around this Auburn-Baylor matchup. Seems like fans are already fired up for this game, Brian, and we still got 2 weeks to go.
Well, they should be fired up. Drama. Look, you don't need excess drama. You don't need drama with this guy. I don't even know what, I'll be honest, I'm not sure what drama you're referring to, you don't need drama for an Auburn-Baylor matchup, and the first time Auburn's opened the season with a true road game since 2002 at Southern Cal. This is a team that's projected to be at the top or near the top of the Big 12. They have a top 10 returning quarterback in the country, by all accounts, and a team with a defensive-minded or credentialed head coach in Dave Aranda, who wants to try to put pressure on Jackson Arnold and this retooled offensive line at the tackle spots early. It's the opener, and there's a lot of excitement around the team. So I think it's normal run-up to the game, and these 15 days are going to go by now, I'm afraid, a little slow as we can't wait to see this team on the field for the first time.
Brad, can't let you get out of here without talking a little bit on the hardwood, as well as Auburn and Houston have been confirmed for the Battleground 2K25 game on Sunday, November 16th in Birmingham, Alabama at the BJCC. Man, we talked a lot about what this game was last year and how we hear all about how, you know, the announcers say these are two Final Four caliber teams, and more times than not, it doesn't come true. This past year was the exact opposite, with Auburn and Houston both making it to the Final Four. What can this rematch mean for this young and inexperienced Auburn team so early on in the schedule?
Could be exactly what last year's game in Houston was for a team that was veteran and, you know, had high hopes and high standards. And they went into Jabari Smith's house and beat a very good Houston team. And it was, I think that may have been the second game of the year or something like that. It was very early last year. But it showed that this team could go win games against high-quality competition no matter the environment. And that became a calling card for the team last year. It beat a lot of high-caliber, high-quality teams in different environments, neutral sites, road games, and certainly at home. So this game has the opportunity to do the same thing. Houston's going to be looking to do exactly what Auburn did last year and go into the other place where it's going to be a decidedly home-favoring crowd in Birmingham, with so many Auburn people in Birmingham that'll fill the place up. Houston will be out to make a statement just like Auburn did a year ago, but even though it's a different place on the schedule, it could do the same thing. It's another opportunity for a young and growing team to come together and get a high-quality win before conference play.
And that's just one of the many non-conference games that Auburn's going to play that are high level. I mean, we've talked about it, right? Purdue and Arizona and the games they'll play out in Las Vegas, Michigan, Oregon are confirmed. And if they do end up playing that third game of that championship, it's another slam-packed non-conference schedule for Auburn men's basketball and the non-con. And then, of course, SEC play always brings the firepower. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network with us every Thursday at 2:30. And look, we're here, man. You guys are on the air Monday evening for the first edition of Tiger Talk. Tell people what they need to know about that and everything else coming up over the next several days.
Yeah, there will be a release going out in the coming days. That first show, see, most of our shows in football season are at Baumhauer's Victory Grill, and we can't wait to be back out there with Kevin Thudhope and that group at Baumhauer's. But Monday's show, this Monday, the season opener for Tiger Talk is going to be at the rooftop of the Graduate. And we would love for there to be a tremendous crowd come out to the Supper Club there at the top of the Graduate and watch the show live. Hugh Freeze is going to be there. We're going to have Butch Thompson with us for a little while, too, to talk about that regional championship team and kind of the growth of that program. And then James Armstrong, first-year coach of the Auburn soccer squad. Their season will be is ready to get underway. And so a tremendous coach ready to lead that program. We're going to have a wonderful time Monday at 6 o'clock, and we hope folks will join us either at the Graduate Hotel or on the radio over on Wings 94.3.
Brad, always appreciate you and your time, my friend. Enjoy the last weekend off for quite some time, all right?
It's a pleasure, guys. You got it. War Eagle.
Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, again with us every single week, 2:30 right here on ESPN 106.7. Hey, speaking of Auburn soccer, season opener tonight at the Auburn Soccer Complex against Louisville. So a really, really exciting day for a new head coach. Of course, Karen Hoppe stepping away after her legendary Hall of Fame type career as the head coach of Auburn Soccer. James Armstrong takes over the realms there, and they've got a little raffle giveaway going on. Did you see that? They're giving away some sweet looking sneakers over at Auburn Soccer, doing an Air Force One Auburn Air Force One giveaway, basically, blue and orange.
With Aubie on there and the Auburn logo. Yeah, they're
pretty
sweet.
Dope. Yeah, pretty sweet. So if you are looking for something to do tonight, go and check that out at the Auburn Soccer Complex, or the radio broadcast will be Weagle 91.1, and I believe our friend Britt Bowen will be on the call on the SEC Network.
Yeah, should be a really fun game. And you're talking about the Auburn basketball non-conference slate, Auburn going out to Tucson. Did you see Arizona's new basketball, the hardwood?
No.
Oh, man.
No.
It'll be great radio for me to describe it to you, but they now have that stereotypical like cactus logo coming up from the sideline.
All right, give me a second. Hold on. Oh, I have not seen
it's
that.
It's almost a little retro. It looks really good.
That does look really good. It's the same idea that Oregon did. Do they still have all the trees and crap on their floor, Oregon basketball?
I think
basketball?
They just have the wings, don't they?
Well, remember back... for so long, Oregon had like the woods on their floor. You know what I'm talking about? It looked horrible. Oregon fans loved
they
it.
They do, yeah.
Is it still that way?
Yeah.
This gives off the same vibe, but about 25% less. No, about 75% less.
Say,
it's 25% of what Oregon has. This looks really cool.
Matches.
Yes, this looks really cool for Arizona. That is really neat. The blue mountains, the red, blood sun going down, and then the green cactus too. That is kind of cool. I'll give them credit for that. That is neat. Much better than the Oregon floor.
And Auburn gets to see it.
That's pretty awesome. So, hey, thanks again to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. Always appreciate him and taking the time to talk to us each and every Thursday. We'll take a break, come back, and start to dip our toes into the Auburn football offensive conversations that have been going on around this week, because we heard from Hugh Freeze, and we heard some good things and some bad things and some things. We'll talk about that, wrap up hour number one. It will most definitely carry us into hour number two. So stick around. We'll wrap up the first hour after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. This is the Thursday edition of On the Line. Just got off the phone with Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network as we're talking Auburn fall camp and getting closer to the kickoff of the Auburn football season 2 weeks from tomorrow. man. Isn't that crazy? 2 weeks from tomorrow, we start college football for Auburn. A week from tomorrow, we start high school football.
Man.
Can't wait, man. Absolutely cannot wait. And
it's one of those vacations that doesn't feel real yet. Just because you're looking forward to it so much, but everything has happened so fast.
Yeah.
That you need next week to slow down just a little bit from the standpoint of, so that way the excitement can build.
I'm really hoping so. At least internally here in the building, it's been a long week, man, and it ain't over. I mean, late nights and just so much to do because it really did just like sneak up. It was
right. And that's what I'm saying. It's not that we have a lack of excitement, but we've been doing so much to get ready for it.
Yeah,
we're hoping that this next week can be. It's Monday. Oh, man, it's Monday of game week.
Hopefully it can feel like a game week. I'll just be honest. Week one for me never feels that way because it's still just so, sure. You know, you're stressed. You're trying to get everything ready and making sure that it works and testing equipment and, you know, just it's game one. You want to make sure that everything goes smoothly for us in terms of the broadcast side of things. But, yeah, really excited for that. Both of us have home openers next Friday. You with Lee Scott on AU 100.3, myself with Auburn High School on Wings 94.3, and it's going to be a lot of fun, man. We're taking on Booker. You guys have Alabama Christian Academy coming in, so really pumped for that. And, hey, there's Georgia high school football tonight.
Yeah, my Buford Wolves taking on
– the Wolves, baby.
Taking on Milton on ESPN2 tonight. And so, shout-out Coach App. Shout-out to the Wolves, baby. Go get it done.
Yeah, $62 million stadium. They ain't showing off that team. They showing off that stadium, man. ain't nobody care about the teams playing. All they want to see is that money go to work, man.
I'm not from that side of it.
That's insane. I'll check it out. I'll still be up here working more than likely, but I'll at least turn it on and check it out.
Yeah, I'll make my way down there for a game before everything is said and done. Because yeah, when I was in high school back in my day, they were talking about it, but clearing land and everything. And so to see what it looks like now is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, that's a rarity in high school football across the country, but Buford got it. So if you really need your football fix, there's high school football tonight on ESPN2. Check that out, and I'm sure we will do the same. Hour number one is in the books. Stick around. We're talking the Auburn offense coming up in hour number two because Hugh Freeze addressed some of those awkward comments from earlier in the week from Derek Nix, and to be honest, I don't think he cleared anything up. We'll play the audio for you, react to it, and a whole lot more coming up in hour two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. If you missed any of the first hour, I'm sorry, but you can go back and listen to it if you want to. You can go back and check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com. And we post the show audio for you there every single day as a podcast, so just check it out, ESPNAU.com. In that first hour, we talked about the drama that continues to unfold or build or whatever word you want to throw in there between Auburn and Baylor, and kind of went a little deeper into the Baylor side of things than I thought we were going to go today, just in terms of how important this game is for the Bears just as much as it is for the Tigers. And so I talked about that today. Also got to speak with Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network and got his thoughts and updates from fall camp. Also got to talk to him a little bit about the freshmen who could be making impacts on this Auburn team this fall, and a little bit of basketball news as well. So that was all in hour number one. If you missed it, go check it out on our station website in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And as we teased on the way out of hour number one, we're starting hour number two talking about the Auburn football off. Seemed like that was working its way into a much more positive side of things as well. We're going to talk some more kick returners and punt returners before we get with Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. We're going to get his thoughts on fall camp all around the SEC with more and more scrimmages as we are closer and closer to week zero and closer to week one of the college football season. I'm Christian Griffin. He's Jacob Goins. And we appreciate everybody for being here with us in hour number two on ESPN 106.7. And before we dive into anything on the Auburn side, I know we had a conversation about a week or so ago about college football forming its own type of red zone with NFL. There was just news that came out that said that Fox Sports will not license Big Ten or Big 12 games to ESPN if there's going to be any sort of potential college football red zone. And so, yeah, you feel like that would just make absolutely no sense for them to do that. So the long-lived ideology of a college football red zone was put to bed.
Yeah, RIP to an idea that lived for about 3 days.
Which you feel was, like, to be completely honest, on the side of college football, man, I love being able to go through all the channels and finding everything.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. I feel like that plays so much more different than the professional side.
Well, I think the fantasy football side of things is what creates that
very much so
niche for NFL, where it's like, oh, is you know, Mecole Hardman going to score?
Right.
Is you know, yeah, T. Higgins going to score?
Yeah, Saquon's in the red zone right now.
Oh, man, I really could use a touchdown pass from Jameis Winston this week. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's what red zone brings. I think that's why it was built, was
for
fantasy.
Yeah, because it almost just shows the highlights of the eight games going on right now.
Right. Whereas college football, it's like, man, there's 100-something games going on, and it's impossible to hit those. And so, yeah.
And that, all different rights.
Yeah, that idea was debunked regardless. And there's different kickoff time. Like, it just... No, no, it wasn't going to work. And so we start the hour, and this will probably carry us up into our conversation with Chris Gordy earlier in the week, Monday to be exact, Monday afternoon. The offensive assistants, the offensive coaches for Auburn football, they met with the media, including Derek Nix, the offensive coordinator for the Tigers. And for some reason, he decided to lay out this idea that play calling is split among several coaches on the staff, right? You all seen the posts about it. We reacted to it. It is Derek Nix calling plays on first down. It is Hugh Freeze calling plays on second down. It is Ken Austin calling plays on third down. And Hugh Freeze having the override switch when he just doesn't like what the play is called. Well, that sent fans up in arms. That just sent fans over the top. Because basically everybody's reaction was, what the heck is that?
What?
Yeah, why? What? Huh? Who? So people got pretty fired up about it. And have been for the past several days. Some people named Christian. And we've talked about
shout
it
out
for,
early on the Tuesday edition.
Yeah, for several days. And so... we've been waiting for Hugh Freeze to address this because he has yet to meet with the media this week until today. Until today at around 12 o'clock. And Doug asked me this morning on his show, he said, has Hugh Freeze addressed this yet? Has Hugh Freeze answered about this yet? And I said, no, but it's funny you ask because he's meeting with the media in about 30 minutes. And I guarantee that would be one of the first two questions that was asked of him when the microphones came on.
Did you throw the JG guarantee on there?
No, but I should have, man.
Man,
man, I could have made one house into two, man. I could have doubled my salary on that
either
one.
Either that or you could have promoted. We're 13-1 with the JG guarantee.
I mean, I ain't thrown that one around in a while. I need to get back to doing that because, I mean, it's when it's on, right?
It is.
And shout out to Jason Caldwell of Auburn Undercover, good friend of ours, good friend of the station. He was the first one to ask it. And rightfully so. That was the appropriate first question for Hugh Freeze today was, what the crap was that? What was that? Okay.
That wasn't how Jason asked it, but...
Well, more or less, that's how Jason Caldwell said it, yeah.
Very easily could have been.
So Caldwell asked him, hey, can you clear up what that was? Is that true? Is that really what happens? And this is what Hugh Freeze had to say. This is about 2 minutes of Freeze talking about the play calling and deciphering it and...
Ain't no way.
Attempting to clear it up, but I just don't think he did the job. Here it is.
We clarify something on like play calling stuff. Last year it was, hey, those guys were kind of setting first and third downs, you know, suggesting things, and then you're kind of going from there. Is that kind of the way it's
supposed to be? It's Derek Nix is the offensive coordinator, and he does all the planning, scripting, in charge of the game plan. But man, there's no staff that it's not a collaboration on the plan, and I offensively are deserve the right to say on the call sheet, nah, I don't really like that one right here. But he does a great job for us. Kent kind of leads the third down plan, but other than that, Nix kind of leads the charge and has the play calling duties, with me reserving the right to say, hey, you know, I go over on defense, and when we're on defense, to do head coaching duties and do the same thing there and say, I think you ought to, man, give me a hole player here. Or I don't tell DJ a whole lot, but there's times I can see what I think offenses are doing, and I say, hey, man, I think we need to cloud this. You know, that's the way it'll be this year. And while I'm doing that, you know, the offensive guys led by Nix are talking about the next series and what we should do. And just, usually there's a darn another TV timeout or something, so I have time to get back on and say, all right, what are y'all thinking? Yes, I like all of that.
When it comes to talking with Jackson on the mic, is it just you talking to him?
It's both of us. We both have the ability to do that. And
you and Nix?
But usually the call comes through me, and I either – yeah, that's what we're doing. Or I say, hey, you got it right now. And I'll try to keep my mouth shut unless I have time to see a check or something that I know we should go to. But hopefully we've done a good enough job coaching and that he gets us in those to begin with.
Is that similar to how you always done things?
Say, yes, the planning, but I called, you know, the majority of the plays at Ole Miss and at Liberty and Arkansas State and the other places. But Nix has been with me so long, he's one of the few that I have a comfort level with, because our verbiage is the same. So he's one that he and Kent both have been with me long enough where I feel comfortable not having to do that all the time.
So Derek Nix is the offensive coordinator, but Ken Austin has third down play calling, game planning, unless Hugh Freeze wants to say something, and then he'll jump in. But in terms of who talks to the quarterback, it is Hugh Freeze. Unless Derek wants to say something, then he will. And then Freeze will try to keep his mouth shut. Unless Ken Austin has something to say, then he'll jump in. But Derek Nix is the offensive coordinator on this certain set of downs on Sunday afternoons when their games are not happening. And then on fourth down, they just kind of let Hudson Cock be the offensive coordinator. And then
you need to carry the four.
And on this particular instance, if it's third and 3.5, it'll be this guy. But if it's third and 4, then Freeze will probably have the override switch on that one. But if Ken Austin has a great idea, they do allow him to put the headset on and say a few things. And they may even ask, what? Huh?
That's why those noises came out I was introducing the show, trying to find the right word.
Like,
because
what the heck was that? that did absolutely nothing to clear up what we've been talking about for 3.5 days.
It literally felt like you walked into the pretest in class on the first day. It was like, all right, we're just going to see your baseline of what this understanding is before. And you walk in and you're stumped by the first question.
That was me on the ACT.
Yeah, but it's like, this is different because you were the one that brought it up, and then you seemed like there wasn't a true response when you know there was going to be questions about the comments. And when you're looking at everything on the planning and play calling, both of those words were used, and you feel like those are are synonyms, although they aren't. You feel like they were used as synonyms because I'm perfectly fine if Ken Austin has the third down planning, because that means, okay, if it's third and 12, we've run these plays and it's worked. If it's third and 7, these type of concepts.
My quarterback's comfortable doing this.
Right. But the way that was used was planning and play calling. It feels like there is some sort of gray area, like what you were saying, of, okay, well, what if this isn't seen, or what if this is seen from a different light because I'm at midfield and you're standing at the 40. I saw that this is what the defense was doing. We need to change it. Although we've had success, we're at the 30. We're in field goal range now. But, you know, I know you've led a 60-yard drive, but now there's the need to go in and change this up because I saw something you didn't. All that we are saying here, sorry, I'll speak for myself. All that I am saying, I'll let you agree or disagree if you want. All that I'm saying here is that it better work.
This just screams lack of confidence.
This screams 2024 frustrations.
More on that in a moment, because I have some things that I want to say that are some things that are eerily similar to what happened last year.
Yeah.
But these comments from Freeze today, and not picking on him in particular, it's just the things that the coaches have said, and it's like,
do you feel like there's no unity?
There's no unity. There's no confidence. There's no trust in any of them to do it. And I think that comes from the top. That comes from Hugh Freeze, who all he does is praise Derek Nix, who's been with him forever. Okay, well then why, if he's your offensive coordinator and that's what he was hired to do, why are you peeking over their shoulder? Why are you hovering above them and making sure that they do it? Yeah, why? Why are you there?
If you have the same mindset and the same verbiage and the same ideas when it comes to this, chances are if he called that play on 3rd and 6, you were going to be relatively in that same spot as well.
And what got me in that clip of audio too was they asked somebody asked about who's talking to the quarterback during the play, right? Who has the headset on? Who's talking in the earpiece?
Well, I can, but so can him.
Oh, it normally comes from me, but if you want to say something, I'll let you. But if you have a really good idea, then I'll just step back and let you say it. But I do have the ability to override you if I don't. Like, I go back to this statement. No freaking wonder that Peyton Thorne couldn't figure it out. No wonder he got worse when he came here. If this is what's been happening, imagine wearing that headset. Imagine being the starting quarterback for a Power 4 team in the SEC on the road in Athens, Georgia. And it's 3rd and 8, and you're just getting whooped, and you need something. And in your headset, you've got your head coach and your offensive coordinator, who clearly aren't on the same page, that are trying to tell you what's going on while the play clock's counting down from 20 and 5 seconds it's going to cut off, and you're just like, well, better figure it out. Do you know how much of a disaster that is?
It really clears things up when you go back and look at certain plays of, oh, this is why the quarterback threw this ball while the receiver ran this. This is why the handoff was supposed to go this way, but they ran into each other. This is why that read wasn't there, but it was forced. And the more you're hearing about it when it comes to Jackson Arnold of, man, we didn't hear that he made the right read today. We heard that Freeze threw his visor out of frustration today because apparently there was a receiver wide open downfield and Jackson Arnold was trying to take the check down or force the ball into coverage. It's, if you're going through this every single day, it feels like there's no way that success can come from it.
I'm going to talk more about that when we come back. And want to get your thoughts as well. 334-321-1390 is the phone line number. If you got a quick thought, you can hit us up in the text box as well at 784-1067. We continue with this conversation and more right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right. I don't know how I want to formulate this.
Ever.
I don't know how I want to go about this, but
You let me rant on Tuesday, so you can go ahead and turn, even, you can turn even, my mic off, and I'll give you 7 minutes.
It's not even going to be a rant. It's just something that hit me when I was listening to the Hugh Freeze media availability. Unfortunately, I had a last-minute meeting come up. I wasn't able to get over there today, but I was able to go back and watch it. And the body language, the verbiage, the response, and the lack of clarity – what we've heard and seen and been told over the first couple of weeks of fall camp so far for the offense. Defense is just getting after it. Defense is good. Defense is fine. Everything's going to be cool on the defensive side of the football. No concerns for me there just yet. But everybody's wondering, will the offense have any sort of life? Will there be any sort of competence from the offense for Auburn this year? And the things that we continue to hear that come out of Hugh Freeze's mouth and the offensive assistant's mouths and what we've been able to see at practice and scrimmages and things, it's like, this sounds way too familiar to Jacob. Something ain't right here. It's like passing the old smell test, as Uncle T-Bone used to say. And you want to know why? It's the exact same thing we heard this time last year, and the same thing we heard the year before, where there was communication problems, there were misreads, there were misthrows, the quarterback wasn't seeing something correctly, the receivers were not running the right routes, and the timing was off, and handoffs were going to the wrong side, like you mentioned. It wasn't clicking and operating and running as smooth as Hugh Freeze would like it to see, is some words he used today.
Yeah, not on the same page.
And at some point, you got to look at this. And I did today. I sat back in my office chair after I watched that press conference or the media availability. He was outside of the facility with beat reporters around him. I leaned back and I said, man, this is the same stuff he said last year. All season long, when Peyton Thorne looked like he wasn't able to play P4 football. When he looked like he couldn't compete at Jack State. And it's like, wait a minute. Maybe it wasn't Peyton Thorne. Maybe the system really was that confusing. Maybe the operations were just so screwed up that not even Peyton Manning could figure it out.
And that's why they had to condense everything to make it that much more simple. And then when things started working out, if this is how it worked last year, man, there weren't too many times where it was Freeze coming on there and saying, I called the wrong play. But every time something worked, felt like it was his mindset that came up on the headset.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because Spectre just sent us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067 and says that Freeze is developing an excuse if he loses the Baylor game. Spectre says that Freeze is protecting himself, covering his own you-know-what.
Yeah, and to where if play calling doesn't work.
Spectre's not the first one to say that, by the way. And I don't know if I'm going there yet. And I don't think I'm professionally going to go that route. But my point here is this is the exact same way Freeze and his staff talked last year about Peyton Thorne in that offense. That is my concern. And I don't know if a good quarterback can fix it just like that. I have a major concern with that. Let's get to the phone lines here really quickly. Got about a minute or two for you. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Yeah, this is Brett from Beauregard.
What's up, Brett?
I listened to Jason Caldwell this morning, and he said that Freeze is the one with the play sheet. He makes the calls. Nix is the only one else who's on the microphone, and sometimes he makes suggestions, and if he likes the suggestion, Freeze lets it go through. But as far as somebody during the game picking a play for first or second or third down, the first and second and third down, that's before the game. That certain coach is assigned first down to do the planning for the game. Another one third down,
right?
Freeze approves the call, but it's not three guys on the mic during the game running the play in. Freeze is the one with the play sheet and making the call almost every play.
Right.
And Seth said that Kiffin said he does things the same way.
And that's what we've talked about, too, is like, and Freeze even addressed it today, like every offensive staff has several people involved. That's not the knock here, right, Brett? It's the fact that, like you said, Nix is on the headset, Freeze is on the headset, Austin can come over and make a suggestion, so there's three, four people trying to make a decision lickety-split just like that in a 20-25 second span. It clearly hasn't worked up to this point, and I just don't see how it's going to continue working with so many people trying to solve the problem. You know what I mean?
Well, it's working elsewhere.
It ain't working here.
What? That has a lot to do with who's executing the play. I mean, first of all, if you can't block, please look at Auburn the last 4 years.
Sure.
It's not going to work. If you don't have a quarterback who can pull the trigger, it's not going to work. Now, if you have both of those, it's going to work most of the time.
And hopefully that's the case today.
Y'all have a great day.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Brett. And I'm with you. Hopefully Auburn has that this year, an improved offensive line and an improved quarterback. But what I'm saying is, if this is the operational execution or operational process that is happening there, I don't care if this is the Baltimore Ravens. It's not going to work. And it may be working elsewhere, that's fine. But it hadn't worked here yet. And a short span, yes. And a short example, yes. Right? But it ain't worked here.
Most places where it works, there's one guy. And I know that there's that body of people around him that still
plan.
Have a very big involvement. But when it comes to Saturdays at 2:30, we've discussed it all. Go make it work.
Let's go. You got it. This is your job.
There's not four of them walking around pulling you on the belt loop saying, hey, I saw this last time. Maybe we should try it. No, I don't know. I think we might go this way.
Oh, goodness. Well, that didn't get any clearer, did it? Let's talk to Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. I'm sure he's got thoughts.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, and we welcome in a guy who always has opinions on Auburn football in particular. Chris, we're going to get your thoughts on the play call and stuff here momentarily. Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, your daily podcast on the Southeastern Conference. But I have to start with the fact that while my Red Sox were able to sweep the Astros last time they played, Chris, I know the series didn't go our way this time, but I choose to look at the run scored, and I'm taking that as a victory for Boston.
That is the best part of baseball, is you could play a three-game series. You can get your ass kicked in game two by a million runs, and it doesn't matter if you won game one and three, you win the series. So, it's not like soccer. It's not like we do a point system and all that. It's a one-off. So, yeah, it was a good series, and the better team won.
God. All right, that's enough, Chris. Now, it was cool to see Bregman, though, back, right? I mean, him to go yard a couple of times in Houston. I saw the fans gave him a standing ovation and everything. That was neat.
Yeah, that's cool. I was excited, too, that the Astros drafted Ethan Frye from LSU in the third round, because as an LSU guy, I've had an LSU guy on all the pro sports teams in Houston, and when Bregman left, I lost my LSU guy. So at least maybe Ethan Frye will come up pretty quickly. But, yeah, I got Derek Stingley with the Texans, and then I've got Tari Eason with the Rockets, and then, of course, I've got, you know, my Auburn love for Jabari Smith with the Rockets. So it's very SEC-centric here.
I mean, Jabari Smith is the best draft pick the Rockets have ever made in the history of their franchise.
Wow, this will be a big year for him to take that next leap. But I love Jabari. I mean, he's got all the potential in the world. We're just waiting for that proverbial light bulb to come in and above his head to turn into a superstar.
Well, Jalen Green's not there, so there's a step in the right direction. Then, right? He can get the ball.
Yeah, I mean, he's Jalen Green was one that, like, man, like, they gave him more than enough sample size, or 4 years to show what he could do, and he just never took that huge leap. So, but honestly, like, I've talked to multiple people that have said they expect Jabari Smith to take that huge leap this year. So let's see.
Hopefully so for Jabari there in the NBA. Well, let's talk to you about big updates around fall camps in the SEC. We've been hitting you with this question for several weeks now, as fall camps have been underway since late July, early August. And look, we're like 2 weeks away from the start of the season, Chris. Is there any team that stands out to you? I mean, the team across the state here named their starting quarterback this week. Let's start there with Ty Simpson with the reins in Alabama. You like that or no?
Yeah, I mean, I'll take no duh for 300, Alex. I mean, it's kind of, you know, we all knew it was coming. They even said went as far in March and April when Kalen DeBoer was doing interviews saying, yeah, if we had to pick a starter today, it'd be Ty Simpson. I'm like, what's going to change between now and September? you know, obviously Keelan Russell, the big time, you know, freshman quarterback coming in, very highly touted, but he had some setbacks this offseason, including the death of his twin sister. And that kind of set him back. And look, for anybody, you need to take it takes an emotional toll, and you have to go deal with family stuff. But, you know, maybe took him a little bit back from, you know, obsessing over a playbook and obsessing over practice and all this kind of stuff. So it's probably right. Look, I still think they'll have packages for him. I did hear from multiple people. They thought there were days at practice that Austin Mack looked very good. That's the transfer from Washington that, you know, Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb and those guys recruited when they were there at Washington. So, you know, a guy that could certainly, you know, that could, you know, was pushing for that job. But I think we all kind of knew it was going to be Ty Simpson's job. And so my question, though, is how long does it last, right? I mean, if he struggles on the road to Florida State, if he struggles in week three at home against Wisconsin, and then, of course, after that is a road trip to Georgia, I mean, there's a storyline you could write where Ty Simpson is up and down and maybe by midseason finds himself benched. I mean, if you really want to go to the extreme. But I think, you know, I'm a betting man. I would put the odds more on he's gonna be really good. I mean, he's in the mold of that Mac Jones, you know, big-time recruit that sat and waited his turn and waited and waited. I mean, he's heading into his fourth season in Tuscaloosa already. So, to me, it's time for him to go shine and show what he can do. And, you know, it's funny, I was looking back at his recruiting profile and they actually listed him as a little bit of a dual threat, that he's got a little bit of running ability. And look, he's not going to be confused for Michael Vick out there, but I'll be curious to see how they utilize this offense. You know, as much as we heard about how bad it was last year with Jalen Milroe under center, you know, Ryan Grubb, they think, is the missing piece. With Ryan Grubb, they're running this offense. They think that he will take it to another level and this whole thing will open up. Just kind of a curious stat, though, guys, that I was not aware of. I mean, Ty Simpson played a little bit in a reserve role these last couple of years as a backup, but the stat that threw me for a loop was in 4 years, going into his fourth year in Tuscaloosa, he's never thrown a touchdown pass. You know, not even a mop-up duty. He had two rushing touchdowns, but he's never thrown a touchdown pass statistically in his college football career. So I got a feeling he's going to break that one week one against FSU.
I don't know, man. That Florida State defense is just, you know, I mean, that's what they're known for down there in Tallahassee off a two-win season.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they were known for in 1990, but I don't know about right now.
Well, to piggyback off of that conversation with Ty Simpson, where would you rank him in terms of all the projected starting quarterbacks in the SEC from a confidence standpoint? Like if you're an Alabama fan and he's your starting quarterback, looking at this from a 30,000 foot view, where would you rank him in terms of confidence in the SEC?
I mean, I think with the combination with Grubb, like I think he could be really good. I would say maybe middle of the pack to start, and we'll see as it goes on, but I mean, keep in mind, this is a league where we've got a 4,000-yard passer returning in Garrett Nussmeier. We've got Lenore Sellers and DJ Lagway, who kind of, you know, took the league by storm down the stretch last year. We, you know, opened all our eyes. Arch Manning coming in as one of the most highly touted, you know, quarterbacks who's barely played. You know, so it's a league littered with that. And then you kind of have this middle pack of what are they? You know, what is Jackson Arnold at Auburn with all his talent around him now?
Yeah, what is Jackson Arnold at Auburn, Chris?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's this hodgepodge of, like, quarterbacks that you could be anywhere from the third-best quarterback in the SEC to the ninth. You know what I mean? So we're going to find out. But, you know, like I said, if I'm a betting man, I feel like Simpson is going to live up to the hype and going to be very productive. And, you know, he's got to have a good run game to go with it. But would it shock me if we look back at the end of the year, Ty Simpson is top five in the SEC in passing? No, I think he's got all the tools there.
quarterbacks obviously take the main spotlight when it comes to all of these fall camp storylines, but elsewhere, whether that's an offensive line, whether that's a receiver, whether that's a defense that you're really, really excited to see that you may not have been excited to see walking into this fall camp. Any storylines along those lines that you're really looking forward to seeing answered here in just a couple weeks?
Well, I'm excited to see, and I'm not just pandering, I'm excited to see the Auburn defense. I just, you've been playing some of the NCAA football game, and they have Keldrick Falk rated so high in that game. I just, you know, I'm excited to see the defensive front. I'm excited to see the secondary, the linebacker play. So Auburn is certainly one I'm keeping my eye on. You know, we've heard all these rumblings at Alabama about, you know, Kane Womack is ready to take this defense to the next level and kind of get it back to the old vintage Alabama defenses under Saban. So I'll be curious to see what they do there. How about Ole Miss? I mean, you know, Santarian Perkins is this highly touted, you know, big-time linebacker who's back to help lead the middle of that defense. But today, Pete Golding gets a big-time extension from Ole Miss, you know, making him one of the highest-paid – I think he will be the highest-paid assistant in all of the SEC. So, well-deserved. But I also think, man, you think about narratives. Like, when Lane Kiffin took the Ole Miss job, I would have put the over-under, you know, oh, he's there 2 years, and then he's moving on to the next thing. And then the same thing with Pete Golding went there as a DC when he got fired from Alabama. I said, oh, he's going to use this as a stepping stone. And he'll be going elsewhere. But, man, this thing is setting up that Pete Golding and Lane Kiffin could be at Oxford for a long time to come. And look at what they've done since they've been there. I mean, I know they haven't won the SEC or made the playoff yet, but they're knocking on the door with all these 10-win seasons. And so I thought that was pretty surprising. But Ole Miss lost a ton of that defense, man. So how do they replenish? They've recruited very well there. How do they replenish, and can the defense help them get some stops and help that offense out? So, you know, those are a few I'm checking out. And then, of course, you know, to me, the big storyline of the day that I was looking over at Florida was Caleb Banks getting hurt and in a walking boot. And again, they're saying it's just a precaution. But, man, they have been a walking wounded over there at Florida's camp. I had somebody text me earlier today and said, man, sell the farm on Florida. Anybody taking the over on Florida win total, you know, this thing could go sideways very quickly if they have injuries to their, you know, stud defensive linemen, stud wide receivers, and God forbid if something happens to Lagway, I mean, this could be a 4-5 win season for Florida. So certainly something to keep an eye on.
We're talking to Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. He's with us every Thursday from 3:30 to 3:45-ish here on ESPN 106.7. And we got to get your thoughts. I told you we would on the dramatics, I guess, that's been happening with Auburn football here the last couple of days since the offensive coordinator, Derek Nix, mentioned to the media Monday that he calls plays on first down, Hugh Freeze calls plays on second down, Ken Austin calls plays on third down, and we were like, wait, what? And then Hugh Freeze addressed the media today and didn't really clarify anything at all. What's your take on all this?
Well, on the surface, you look at it and say this is a recipe for disaster. I mean, this could be a real mess very quickly. The line that everybody kind of glossed over was that Hugh Freeze has the ability to override any call at any time, and rightfully so. I just don't know how this works. Like, okay, this might work in practice. You know, maybe you get a system down, but like in a game situation where you're down and the blank is hitting the fan, I mean, are we really gonna? Hey, no. We called 11 personnel. Hey, no, come out. You come out. You go in. You know, I mean, like you can't. You don't have time to do this in an actual game. So I'll be curious to see how they execute it. But on the surface, when I heard it, though, I mean, part of me goes, this might be much ado about nothing. I mean, this. Again, they're maybe this is an overblown storyline, but again, when you're under the pressure that Hugh Freeze and Auburn is this year to improve that win total, God, again, like it just feels like these little negative storylines keep leaking out, and it's like you want positivity. I want to hear that Jackson Arnold crushed it today. I want to hear that Cam Coleman is the best receiver in all of college football. Like I want to hear those things coming out of Auburn as opposed to these little things about golfing and bad recruiting and now we got different coaches calling plays on every down. It's just, it's not what you want.
It's funny you say that, because we were off air talking about that right before getting on the phone lines with you and talking about how, man, it would be so much more peaceful and enjoyable from our standpoint to be able to walk on here and sit in front of the radio and lean back the entire time and sit there and say, man, everything's coming together. Jackson Arnold looked really good. This offensive line is gelling together. But then you have quotes like these, and there may be a lot of overreaction from the fan base, but you feel like it's warranted simply because it's a lot of what you heard this time last year with Peyton Thorne in the offense, and you saw how obviously that worked out. So, yeah, you feel like there's just so many concerns on that side because you feel that this year cannot be that same way.
Right, and it's the same thing. Like, I look at DeBoer at Alabama. He's under the microscope there, but he's still getting a little bit of the benefit of the doubt from the fan base because it's only year two. You know, rewind a year ago this time. I was very optimistic on Auburn and Hugh Freeze still in year two. But now heading into year three, man, the pressure's on. And so, you know, DeBoer will be in that same spot next year at this time if he doesn't improve the win total of Alabama. And you know, again, that's what it comes down to is, you know, we were loving the top 10 recruiting classes Hugh was putting together and the staff he was putting together and everything. But again, at the end of the day, you got to win football games. That's all the fan base gives a damn about. And I had somebody asking me yesterday, the over under win total for Auburn 7.5. I went over. I said 8-4 has to be what they get to, because to me, anything less than that is a disappointment. 7-5 just, again, maybe it saves his job, but it doesn't get everybody all excited and, oh, my God, let's go renew our season tickets right now. We went 7-5. Like, to me, 8 wins or better has to be the bar this year with all the talent you got on offense.
Chris, before we let you get out of here, I know you love talking football, but more than that, I know that Taylor Swift is on the premier headlines for you. And, man, she just seems to name drop all of these Texas receivers. I mean, what is the true insight that you have on Taylor Swift with Texas football?
I ended up watching that whole thing with my wife yesterday.
You and 1.3 million people.
Yeah, it was pretty entertaining from a standpoint of, you know, you got to know her a little bit as a person, but it was a sports podcast. So for her, kudos to her to admit she didn't even know when she first started watching the NFL. She thought the quarterbacks played both sides of the ball. So it sounds like she has improved her football knowledge tremendously. And so, I thought it was entertaining. Again, people can hate on her and Travis Kelce and all that. I thought it was entertaining.
In 21 hours, that video, the New Heights podcast, of course, the Kelce brothers had Taylor Swift on there. She debuted her new album. In just 21 hours, it already has 12 million views. And when it was live, the highest peak was 1.3 million people watching it at one given time.
I mean, that's comparable, Chris, to your video on Saban returning to the SEC, right?
I mean, it was close. The only thing is, I had sponsors. Like, they had a huge missed opportunity and not having. I mean,
you just needed Taylor.
Presented by DraftKings or FanDuel or something. I mean, missed opportunity there, Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of SEO, man, just throw Taylor Swift in your title somewhere on the next Locked On SEC and see the difference in the numbers, my man.
Yeah, I mean, I would have just taken a shout out of her saying, hey, check out Locked On SEC. I mean, that would have been nice.
I mean, we'll see what we can do for you, my friend. And while we're doing that, tell people where they can find you and your podcast with Locked On SEC as we are getting oh so close to the start of college football.
Yeah, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, too, our folks here in Houston were pretty fired up with the news of the Houston Cougars and Auburn going at it in Birmingham in basketball. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to see as a fun non-conference kind of game. But, yeah, Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcast. And, man, we're gearing up. We've got some great content, some great interviews. Looking forward to next week. We're actually going to have Coach join us, Coach Scott Cochran, former Alabama and Georgia strength and conditioning coach. So we're getting fired up, man. Season's almost here. And, gosh, what is it, 2 weeks from tomorrow? We are in Waco with Baylor Auburn. Cannot wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And on the basketball thing, it's just nice that Auburn doesn't have to make a true road trip to downtown Houston right next to campus this year.
Well, and look, at least y'all have one good coach on campus. he's doing his job.
God. Oh, God. Chris, we appreciate you, my friend. Always enjoy the conversations.
Thanks, all.
Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC. Check it out wherever you get your podcast. What a guy. He always on the way out, too.
Always.
Man. Always on the way out.
We need to start talking Auburn football. Ask the heavy hitters to start the show so there's not that easy out.
Did you watch the episode? Did you watch the New Heights episode?
I
did not watch
it. I have it very high on my priority list.
I will admit that I did check it out. I was here working late last night, and I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot that had started, and I pulled it up on YouTube, and when I looked at it, it was 1.3 million, and I read an article this morning that said that was the highest it got. But when the video debuted on YouTube, there were 1.3 million people watching it on YouTube. That's wild.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
You don't feel like that's real. There's not a million people in the world. What do you mean?
Yeah, literally. There's not a million Taylor Swift fans. I mean, all those people went to see Jason Kelsey. That's so nice of them.
That is. Congrats. I mean,
congrats,
hey, sexiest man alive right there.
What a guy. All right, we'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it all up here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC hopping on with us.
And we appreciate all 21 million listeners that are listening to On the Line right now as well.
I mean, we are roundabout in that number. It definitely goes up when we have Chris Gordy on.
That's fair. And then it goes really far down as soon as we're getting us out because he's waiting for something to say.
Yes, that's exactly right. So Chris Gordy, we appreciate him hopping on with us. Also, Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network in hour number one hopped on with us, too. And we've had a lot of fun conversations. The Auburn-Baylor drama that continues to build and talking about some of the play-calling things that coaches have been talking about. And we really do hope that it just gets cleared up, man. Just we want the offense to look smooth. And Chris hit on it. You hit on it. It's like you just want – you want to hear better things coming out of fall camp right now. Luckily, you do still have 2 weeks to get it figured out, and a lot can happen in 2 weeks for this Auburn offense. You just want to start hearing, with the scrimmage this weekend, you want to start hearing better, more positive things from this Auburn football offense.
If it helps, they're talking about going into the scrimmage tomorrow a little short-staffed on the wide receiver units. I know there's a couple...
Nothing crazy.
Nothing injuries, but just a couple little nagging things. I know Eric Singleton's name was dropped in there of an injury that could just, you know, work its way into early next week. Again, all just precautionary things, but, you know, if we're at the point of flipping out, then might as well just add that to the list of, man, season's done. Sorry, guys.
Well, hey, starting this weekend, Freeze did also mention Sunday is going to be treated like Monday for the next 2 weeks. Yeah. They're going to treat it as a Friday game day to get themselves ready to go. And so... that'll be interesting to see how they adjust, because it is. It's an adjustment. Just go back to your high school days, man. And just a high school Friday night, baby.
That's all you need.
Friday Night Lights at Waco, Texas.
All you need. Free for all Friday tomorrow is going to be a whole lot of fun, man. Only four top 25 games for Auburn, according to week one of the AP Top 25. Two at home, two on the road. Which game or games are unacceptable for Auburn to lose?
That and a whole lot more on a free-for-all Friday edition of On the Line tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.